Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I am simply too bisexual to be asked to ever look at a spreadsheet.
Hi, my name is Violet, my pronouns are she, her, I have ADHD, and I used to think I was bisexual until I actually dated a man, and then I found out I was not bisexual.
That'll do it for some people.
Yep. Yeah, I learned the hard way, but that's okay.
In the hard way. The hard way.
It was very hard at times, not so much at others.
Today we're going to be talking about historical, probably, bisexuals. This last Pride, I got very annoyed because bisexual people seem to be, well, bisexual and polyamorous people seem to be the queer community's agreed upon punching bags.
Yep.
Like, it's just okay to goof about us and our experience, and it's okay to dunk on us, it's fine. Even though bisexuals make up the bulk of the LGBTQ community.
Yeah. And that's if people even remember to mention that they exist.
Yes. So I personally get annoyed because people are like, lesbian? And I'm like, listen, I love lesbians. I am not one.
I've never been to Lisbon, but I'm sure it's great.
Queer people seem to think that I'm like, well, so you're actually a lesbian, because the Lesbian Master Doc came out and they're just convinced that I think bisexuality doesn't exist. And then, like, I keep getting sent this reel where it has someone saying, you'll see, like, a butch who's the prettiest butch you've ever seen with spiky red hair and a button-down shirt, and then she'll talk about how much she loves her husband. And just a few people in the comments are like, bisexuals exist. And I've been sent this so many times, but people are just like, yeah, she's closeted. I'm like, no, some people who can look however they want to look.
Even a butchy looking bisexual is still bisexual.
Still bisexual. Yeah. Sometimes my attraction to men has been more disabling than the autism.
It's a big take. It's a correct take. But it's a big take.
Yeah. No, it's not a choice. It's not a choice.
Yeah.
So yeah, given that and how I've just been bisexual and annoyed, we're going to talk about some famous historical bisexuals who some people still are like, well, we don't know that she loved her husband. And I'm like, well, we don't know that your mom loved you, but you're out here causing shit and making fun of people. So
got him. Fucking got their ass.
But yes, so I've been annoyed and bisexual. And then, like, the internet had me defending JoJo Siwa. Made me defend JoJo Siwa. Because she, yeah, that's how angry I got. Because she,
what a series of events that must have been.
Yeah, because she was like, I'm a lesbian. Actually, I think queer fits better. And now she's dating a man. And they're like, come back out of the closet, JoJo. And I'm like, some of us don't care about gender. But then there's also, she did a whole very trad wife looking weird Rod Stewart rendition of Betty Davis eyes, which if you want to take some psychic damage later, go ahead and look that up. It's absolute dog shit.
Sorry. Betty Davis eyes?
Yeah.
2025, the year of our Lord, 2025. JoJo Siwa?
In trad wife attire.
That sounds like...
And she's like,
a cognito
Betty
hazard.
Davis eyes. Like, I'm not joking. That's not far off.
Oh,
but anyway,
wow. They
made me defend. Me defend her and saying, hey, some people like all genders. So before I begin, I use the term bisexual partly because of my age. I'm a millennial. That's the term we have. That's the term we had. I'm bisexual. There also seem to be some Tumblr tender queers who think that bisexuality is transphobic and doesn't include non-binary people. And I would encourage them all to go out and touch grass and learn some queer history, because the Bisexual Manifesto, which, oh, there's a magazine that had a very good bisexual pun in the early 90s, I forget. But all the way back to when, like, 1990, they're talking about how people who do not fit under the gender binary are still folks you can be attracted to being bisexual. And it's always been trans inclusive. Yep. Some people are fucking bi. And to me, the queerest thing I could possibly do is not give a shit about someone's gender.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's the queerest thing I could possibly do. And as an autistic person, it's like, well, if gender is not how you express yourself, and gender is not your pronouns, and gender is not how you look on the outside, how am I sure of the gender of anyone that I have felt attracted to ever until I actually get to know them? So by that account, gender probably doesn't matter, because I can't just know a person's gender by looking at them. Yeah, my autism experience of gender is also, like, makes it where it would feel ridiculous for me not to include all genders. I don't know. Autism affects all of that. So anyway, we're going to talk about some famous historical bisexuals.
Such as, and there's a quintessential bisexual that we're all thinking of right now. Let's say it at the same time. One, two, three. Barney.
Barney?
You didn't say anything. I feel weird.
Oh, I didn't know who you were going to say. And I was like, who are we all thinking of?
No, I was just goofing. I just said something completely random.
I loved Barney as a kid. So if he turned out to be bisexual, that would track.
I think that would make sense.
That would make sense.
Big purple dinosaur.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just trying to do a goof and see what you would say is the quintessential bisexual.
Because I thought I had it on the list, and I was like, oh, I can't say someone I have on my list.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. Gotcha.
But we're going to start way, way back in ancient Macedonia and talk about Alexander the Great.
Okay. Hell yeah.
So, yeah, there was that whole movie, Alexander, where he's gay with Jared Leto and, like, Jared Leto. Alexander the Great was actually bisexual.
Now, I haven't seen Hamilton, but is this the same Hamilton, Alexander?
Alexander Hamilton.
I know. I'm just fucking with you. Sorry. Sorry. I'm playing a heel today, apparently.
Apparently.
I'm on a tear.
So, Alexander was married three times. Once to a woman named Roxana, who, for all appearances, this was out of love. And twice to... This sounds like Stratera. I don't know how you pronounce it, but it's Statira, Stateira, Statira the Second, and Parasatis the Second. They both sound like medications.
I was going to say two out of the three of those sound like medications.
Yes, but Statira the Second and Parasatis the Second for political reasons. But what we're going to focus on is Alexander's close relationship with a man named Hephaestion.
Hephaestion. What a name. I'm just going to do a quick tangent to really quick say people don't have cool names anymore.
No, they don't.
Everyone's got just like John, Stephen, Barbara, Shelby. Where's the what was it again?
Hephaestion.
Hephaestion. I've never seen a person named Hephaestion in my goddamn life, and it's a shame.
Well, Plutarch wrote that Alexander showed the most affection for Hephaestion.
Sorry, Plutarch?
Plutarch.
God, all these full fucking cool names. We need to bring it back, y'all. Name your child Plutarch today.
So the only person that Alexander would permit to read letters that his mother sent him was Hephaestion. So he straight up was like, look at what my mommy sent me.
Huh.
No one else can read it. Hephaestion, come here. Look at what my mommy said.
Interesting. So wait, so letters from his mom, he would only let this one person read?
Yeah, he would read them himself, but the only person he would share the contents with was Hephaestion. You know, almost like back when I talked to my mom, I would be like, you won't believe the shit my mom said on the phone. That I would tell that to you and James. Gotcha. I wouldn't say that to most people, but I would share that with you and James.
Normal bestie things.
Yeah.
Intimate details of my family relationships.
Yeah. Well, things really kind of confirm that Alexander the Great was bisexual when we get to after Hephaestion died.
Oh, no.
Alexander absolutely lost it after Hephaestion died. After Alexander's own death, there was a saying amongst certain philosophers about Alexander himself, and that it was that he was only defeated once, and that was by Hephaestion's thighs.
Yeah, that's a straight thought
if I've ever heard one. A totally straight thing, right?
Couldn't be anything straighter to say
Just bros really appreciating bros hammies, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, just like, oh man, my one weakness is
my bros,
Brienne's thighs.
Totally straight.
In a straight way, yes. Yeah, I've had that thought about men. Definitely,
for sure.
Yeah, it's just normal.
So while evidence of their relationship being romantic is circumstantial, Bisexual behavior in ancient Greece was common enough that inferring the relationship was romantic isn't really a leap at all. It was so commonplace. It was so fucking commonplace that just to think, yeah, they were fucking. That's not out of pocket. So in 324 BC, Hephaestion died of an illness, which they kind of just said is like a fever. Caught something. It was the olden times. They probably tied a chicken to his arm and rubbed some camel poop on his eyes. And they're like, why isn't he getting better?
Yeah, like drained all his blood out. And we're like, what? Why isn't
We took all the blood out. What happened? Plutarch wrote that Alexander's grief was uncontrollable. He gave orders to have all of his horses' manes and tails cut as a sign of mourning. He crucified the physician who was caring for Hephaestion while he was ill.
Damn.
He forbade anyone from playing music. He spent a fortune on Hephaestion's tomb, which by today's money would amount to around $200 million.
God damn.
On Hephaestion's tomb.
That's wild.
Hey, that's not.
I mean, like,
that's
I get
not
it.
Something you just do for someone you're kind of friends with.
Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, if anything happened to you, I think I would be in. If I had that kind of power, I think I would be in a similar boat. I'd be like, I'm fucking mourning. I don't want to hear any goddamn music. Cut my horse's manes. Probably not their tails. That's weird. But the manes, cut them. Because that somehow is a sign of mourning.
Okay, I have to be clear with you. You know that their tails. Like, they stop pretty shortly down the tail, right?
Oh, I didn't know. They got little nubbins?
Yeah, it's called the dock of the tail. And it's like, I say like 8 to 10 inches. And then the long flowy hair grows out of that.
Oh, okay. Huh. Yeah, no, I didn't know that actually.
Yeah, so cutting.
I just assumed there was a core.
There is a core, but it's just not a very long one. They have a lustrous. Yeah, so he wasn't that terrible to the horses. They're just like, oh, no, my hair. You gave me a fuck-ass bob. I didn't want this haircut.
Got to go. Out of mourning. I will admit, I don't get why he cut the horse's hair.
I don't know. There might have been some ancient Macedonian thing where look at how luxurious they look. And he's like, no more luxury for you.
No beauty.
No beauty here with my dear Hephaestion gone. So, yes, that was Alexander the Great, the oldest bisexual we'll be talking about today. So, so next is Josephine Baker. Are you familiar with Josephine Baker?
The name sounds very familiar, although I cannot quite for the life of me remember where that's from.
So, you should go ahead and just look up a picture of her now, so you get her in her mind's eye. Gorgeous.
Gotcha.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. She was a singer, a dancer, and a fucking spy who would steal Nazi secrets.
That's where I've heard of her before. Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember. I've seen pictures of her before. Yeah, no, she's a baddie.
Yeah, baddie, badass, bisexual. So she was born in St. Louis, and she danced and joined the chorus for a road company before deciding to move to Paris in 1925. And when she got there, she quickly became one of France's most popular entertainers at the time. There's one image that you've likely run into looking her up, and it's of a performance at the Folies Bergère in France where she wore a G-string that was adorned with bananas.
Oh, yeah, I see that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Joseph...
They're not, like, actual bananas. They're, like, bejeweled bananas.
Yeah, they're, like, sparkly bejeweled bananas. No, she's like, I'm beating these up. I'm gonna make banana bread later.
Yeah, there's some really, honestly, sickening looks here. Like, the one with the black feathers...
Oh, every look was a serve. Like, I get why she was the most popular entertainer.
Yeah.
So, Josephine Baker was also the first black woman to star in a major motion picture with the film Zuzu in 1934.
Hmm, okay.
So, when World...
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, amazing accomplishment. So, when World War II broke out, she worked as both an ambulance driver and a spy, on top of continuing to dance.
Listen, if I get mortally wounded during World War II and my ambulance driver
looks like
fucking,
Josephine Baker, yeah.
I would be like,
did I die? did the Valkyrie?
Did I die and go to heaven?
Are you an angel?
Hello, nurse.
Yeah, for real. Hello, gorgeous. She was so high profile and charming. She was able to get close to important high-ranking Axis powers officials to get information on troop locations and plans. Because these guys were like, Wow, that's Josephine Baker. She's a beautiful woman who we're discounting because she's a singer and a dancer. Sure, I can tell her things. What is this woman going to do with any of it? And to that, she said, what am I going to do with that? I'm going to write my findings in invisible ink on the back of my sheet music and pin recon photos to my underwear so I could sneak the images out of places and give them to the troops fighting the Nazis. Incredible.
Fuck the Nazis.
Yeah. So she refused to perform to segregated audiences.
Nice.
And she would help integrate live shows in Las Vegas. And because of this, the Klan actually threatened her, but she just publicly says she wasn't fucking afraid of them.
Hell yeah.
And she was going to do...
That is such a boss move.
She's like, okay, I'm going to keep doing my integrated shows in Las Vegas. Go fuck yourself.
That's dope. Yeah. Oh, the Klan's going to come get me. Whatever. Fuck you.
So one of Josephine's sons, who is a historian named Jean-Claude Baker, said that she would often form what he called lady lover friendships with other women she would perform with and travel on the road. So she was married 4 times and often had affairs with men and women, including Frida Kahlo.
Oh, cool.
Who is another famous historical bisexual.
Yeah.
I didn't include her. I feel like Frida gets talked about a lot. She probably pegged Leon Trotsky, so... You know, hell yeah.
Oh, man. This is a good episode already.
But yeah, so Josephine Baker, all around badass, even if she hadn't have been bisexual, just a badass in her own right. I need a full feature length movie of her exploits.
Yeah, basically like a real life Bond girl.
Essentially, but more competent, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, yeah. Well said. More competent, like as if the Bond girl was the main character.
Which, honestly, it's about time we get a movie where Bond girl just happens to run into James Bond. And she's like, okay, hi, 007. I'm in the middle of something. And that's his only appearance.
Yes.
Get at me.
Exactly, yeah. We need a Jane Bond.
Get at me, MGM. But all right, the next one is someone who I see often get referred to as simply being gay, but was very likely bisexual. And that is Hans Christian Andersen.
Where have I heard that? I'm so terrible with names.
Wrote The Little Mermaid.
Among other
Among other things, the dude killed it with fairy tales. He also wrote The Emperor's New Clothes, The Ugly Duckling, and Thumbelina.
I just looked up a picture of this guy. He looks bisexual.
He just has bisexual face or something.
Yeah, he's just got this look that he says like, that's a nice pair of titties. That's a nice pair of thighs. Like, I don't know. I feel like he's got a look about his face that just says, I'm not gay, but I'm not straight.
But I ain't straight either. All of those wildly popular fairy tales, several of which have themes of not belonging for one in a world for one reason or another, being split between worlds, right, is by a bisexual Danish guy named Hans.
Who, once again, looks very bisexual. Look him up.
Just has a tote bag and a moth tattoo or something. A nose ring.
You know, it's really, I don't know what it is, but honestly, like, if you look it up, there's something about the way he's got this, like, look on his face. He's just like, I swing both ways.
It's a look I frequently have or something.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
So he fell in love with a Swedish singer named Jenny Lind and even proposed to her in a love letter, but she rejected him because she saw him as more of a brother. So,
damn, that's rough.
Ouch.
Oof, my bones.
The thing most people understand or tend to understand is that The Little Mermaid is actually about him falling in love with a man he could not be with.
Oh, I see that. Interesting.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
A story of queer longing. And if you read the original Little Mermaid, it is much, much, much darker. Like, there's a whole bit about it where sea foam that you see on the ocean is what mermaids turn into when they die. And it gets pretty dark. Bro was going through it. The Disney version very much sanitized it.
Yeah, they're still singing crabs in it though, right?
No, unfortunately not.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is dark.
It is dark. He also wrote about abstaining from long-term romantic relationships. So I was like, was he an ace king? We may never know. We may never know, but there is a distinct possibility Bro was bisexual, but also on the ace spectrum at some point, or the aromantic spectrum. I'm on the aromantic spectrum. You and James are the only two people I've ever been like, yes, I'd like to share my life and my day-to-day experiences with you, my darlings. One can be both.
Mm-hmm.
He once fell in love with a man named, and this I had to stop and not say Edward Cullen. The man's name was Edward Cullen.
What are the odds?
Yes.
What are the odds?
But he wrote, so Hans wrote this to him. This is a quote. I languish for you as for a pretty Calabrian wench. My sentiments for you are those of a woman. The femininity of my nature in our friendship must remain a mystery.
That is the most cut and dry bisexual statement I think I have ever heard in my life.
But when I hear him written about a lot, people are like, he was secretly gay. It's like, no, he also straight up wrote to this Swedish woman that he wanted to marry her.
Exactly. Like, with the context of that, it is the most bisexual thing. It's like, he's saying, I am attracted to women, and the attraction I feel for you is the same type of attraction that I feel for women.
Yeah.
Which is bisexuality in a nutshell.
But that's, Violet, the frustrating part of the bisexual experience is no matter how much a bisexual person shows that they are attracted to both, the queer community, without a doubt, will have the bulk of people saying, so they were gay and trapped and that was their beard.
Yeah. Oh, and you're just flip-flopping back and forth is what it is.
Like, no.
It must be especially hard being monogamous as well, because you don't have the card that you can play of, no, I'm in a poly relationship and I'm dating both a man and a woman.
Yeah, like, I have the ultimate bisexual card, but when I was just with James, who is non-binary, didn't know at the time, mm-hmm. a lot of people were like, okay, and like, the queer community loves to dunk on bisexual women who are in relationships with people that they perceive as men. I'll say that they perceive as men. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. I feel for Hans, and that motherfucker could write a fairy tale.
Oh, yeah. No. That dude absolutely can. I mean, thinking back into the plots of those stories, it all makes sense.
Right.
I think it's all... I don't know if it was a conscious effort or a subconscious effort on his part to just think about, like, okay, what's the conflict of this story? It's going to be a metaphor for bisexuality in some way.
I don't know if it's conscious. So, like, when I'm writing, I will write my concept for something, and then I'll look at it and go, oh, you're really writing about that, huh? So I don't actually set out intentionally to write out about a certain theme, but then I'll write it and see what the theme is. I'm like, all right, whatever. Guess that's what's on the menu for today, and that's what I'm doing.
Interesting. Now, I wonder, back when Hans Christian Andersen was, like, doing his thing back in the day, Was bisexuality kind of a known thing at that point, or was it just not really talked about?
I mean, by that point, it would be seen as the form of deviance.
I think it was like the late 1800s when the term bisexuality was coined, if I recall correctly. So if this was before then, he may not have had a word for what he was feeling, which is a mood I relate to a lot.
Which, yeah, like me as a kid, I didn't know bisexual was a thing. I thought there was something wicked and evil about me because it just wasn't expressed as a way for someone to be. And coming in a very religious family, I knew what gay was and I knew that was bad. And I was like, well, what is wrong with me that I am attracted to, you know, at the time I only conceptualized of the binary, boys and girls. But I was like, well, I like both of these. What's wrong with me?
Before I transitioned, I thought that all of these thoughts and feelings that I have were either the result of, for a brief period, I thought I had some sort of demon possession situation going on.
And that's unrelated. And then I started to realize, unrelated to you being trans, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was a thing separately, but we're on good
issue,
terms
yeah.
now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We it was just more of like a roommate's kind of disagreement. We got it sorted out. But by the time I figured out I was trans, I definitely, there was a long time where I thought like I was just some sort of like weird pervert, like fucked up in the head. I don't know.
Yeah, so I can't...
Just trans.
Just trans.
I didn't have the word for
just
it.
Just trans, just a neutral thing. Like, oh, I'm a trans person.
Yep.
Okay. But yeah, when you don't have words for it. So there are a lot of these people that I do absolutely feel for because they didn't have the language for that. The next person we're going to talk about whose relationships with men, I feel like, don't get the airtime they should, is history's most notorious lover boy, Giacomo Casanova.
As soon as I heard the last name, I knew who you're talking about.
So he is revered as history's most famous lover, But the stuff is usually talking about him with women. Don't know why.
That makes sense.
Don't know why the hetero ones get all of the airtime, but yeah. Casanova had gone to school to become a lawyer, but switched gears to become a scribe for the Cardinal Acquaviva, which is a great name, in Rome.
That's a cool name.
He was actually more interested in the church's forbidden library than his actual job. And he helped write secret love letters for two cardinals who were in love.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's really adorable, actually. Imagine being a cardinal in the church, and then there's some other cardinal who you're like, I am secretly in love. And, oh my god, what,
and then
what
there's,
a tale
and then
for
there's
the ages.
This,
how have they not made this into a
and
movie?
And there's this troublemaking bisexual who's like, I'll help you write love letters. I want to
this needs to be
I want to insert myself in this situation. Do you like me? Yes, check yes or no. This is going to take off. People are going to love this. Send this to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Love it.
So he got fired from his job.
What?
Partly Ugh. For his role in the letters between the cardinals. Aww. And he ended up playing violin for the San Samuel Theater, where he caught the attention of an Italian senator named Bragadine. He became a lifelong patron of the senator, where he got the funds and the lifestyle that we kind of associate with him as history's greatest lover boy.
Interesting.
So
at this point, he was like, I'm like wealthy and able to kind of fuck around.
I have this rich guy who thinks I'm just absolutely the neatest dude. And loves my violin playing. And he gives me loads of money to, like, hang out with him and play violin and just be cool,
gotcha,
right?
Gotcha.
So he eventually lost his patronage from this senator. And can you guess why he lost this patronage?
Showing attraction to this senator?
No, there wouldn't be... In a million years, you wouldn't be able to guess why. He was run out of town when he dug up a freshly buried corpse to play a prank on someone, and that person went into paralysis from the shock.
What?
Yeah, no, there's...
So, hold on. Back up a step. Why is he digging up... He's
for a
digging
prank,
up a corpse?
For a prank.
For a prank?
He said, hello, I'm Casanova.
Just a
I'm
prank,
Casanova.
Bro.
This is Jackass. I'm going to play a prank on my buddy, Estevo, and we're going to dig up this... Yeah, no. He dug up a freshly buried corpse, and from what I read, this person didn't seem to recover from the paralysis of this corpse prank, and they were like, man, you can't be here. You gotta go.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest, I don't quite understand how... Showing someone a freshly dug up corpse, which is fucked up.
I don't
up,
think
admittedly.
No, I don't think it's
How
I don't
does
think
that
he
cause paralysis?
I don't think he just showed the corpse. I couldn't get the deets very easily on what the prank was, but the vibe was like he probably put the corpse somewhere for this person to find.
Oh. I mean, that's again, still extremely fucked up. How does that lead to paralysis?
Don't know.
I don't,
don't know. Don't know. Yeah. Just going off of what
oh, well.
They wrote. Yeah. But
probably got the vapors or something old-timey like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so they're like, hey man, you can't stay here. So he would flee Italy and then develop a penchant for getting run out of every town he tried to chill in. He had a knack for finding and joining secret societies.
That's pretty fucking
so
cool.
So he eventually became a Freemason.
Oh. Well, I guess that makes sense.
He was once arrested for an affront to religion and common decency, which I think is pretty punk rock.
Yeah, honestly, that's a great thing to have on your rap sheet.
He went into great detail on his affairs with men and women in over 120 different stories throughout his memoirs, which are contained in several volumes. So for his, we have it as much from the horse's mouth as we can. That he was bisexual. So he might be the most iconic disaster bisexual.
Honestly, that's a vibe.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So corpse prank was weird, man. Like, that one, I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that one passes the sniff test. But everything else is cool.
So next we're going to talk about who might be my favorite, like, figure from this list. And that is Virginia Woolf. Yeah.
I didn't know Virginia Woolf was bisexual.
She was. Very cool. Very likely autistic, just from my sort of understanding of how she described the world and herself and everything. gorgeous. I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of her, but absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. No. Absolutely, yeah.
So, evidence in Virginia's diaries strongly suggests that she genuinely felt intense and deep romantic love for her husband, Leonard Wolfe. What we know of Leonard tells us that was also reciprocated. So, again, some people try to say, like, she wasn't really in love with Leonard. And it's like, no, in her diary, she talks about how much she loves him. I don't know why she would write that if she didn't feel that. Both Leonard and Virginia belonged to a writers group called the Bloomsbury Group. It was a circle of British writers, philosophers, and artists. And the group was really known for having more progressive views on sexuality. Virginia and Leonard were non-monogamous, and not all of Virginia's partners were men. So they were were a polyamorous artist couple.
I love that. And it's interesting, too, that not only was she bisexual, she was poly, which is, like, for the time, incredible. I feel like that was kind of unheard
incredible.
Of.
You can see why she's one of my favorites. And yeah. She's a writer, so she's almost immediately one of my favorites on the list.
She's very cool. And I do think it's funny. I did Google a picture of Virginia Woolf, and I searched Virginia Woolf bisexual. There's a lot of people that mention this online, apparently, if you search that specific phrase. But one of the first things that I see is Virginia Woolf's secret lesbian relationship. And I'm like,
yeah,
that's not the right word.
No, but people will use that to refer to me a lot of the time. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And people are like, well, some people treat the word lesbian as gross. And I'm like, it's not that. I love lesbians. Lesbian, lesbian, lesbian. I love my lesbian. Lesbians are great.
Yeah.
But I am not one.
And that's okay.
Thank you.
I love my bisexual
Thank
girlfriend.
You. Oh, that's okay. Good to know that that's okay.
Yeah. It's all good.
So in...
I needed to give you my permission for that.
Oh, good. I can finally live in peace. So in 1922, she met writer Vida Sackville West, who was another member of the Bloomsbury Group. They began an intense romance and deep friendship shortly thereafter. In a letter to her husband, Vida said that her romance with Virginia was only consummated twice. The romance fizzled out, but they remained dear friends. In several of Virginia's novels, including Mrs. Dalloway and Orlando, there are bisexual characters.
Hell yeah.
Love her. I also really like, she has the book, or it's more of an essay, really, A Room of One's Own. Because people will very often ask her, why don't we have more prolific and prominent female writers like you? And she talks about, well, in order to write the way I do, a woman needs a room of one's own. And she goes on to list things that are basically like, you need to help monetarily support us so we have the space to do this. And it was essentially saying, my supportive husband, Leonard, sees my writing as a viable career option. And because of his support and having a space that is my own and having the space and time to do this and the understanding is why I need to do that. So if you want to have more great female writers, there's nothing that I need to teach them. It's that you as a society need to give those women the space and the support to create the art that you so appreciate from me, which I am very privileged to be able to give you.
Yeah. And I feel this is so true of almost, or not almost, like every male dominated field. It's like the issue is that in some way women are not supported in this interest.
Yeah. So she just said, I'm not an anomaly. I am not just some supremely talented woman. I have had the support I need to be able to do this. So we're going to end this on someone who you might not know who she is, but you very much appreciate her legacy. And that is Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
That name also sounds familiar. She was a writer also?
No, right? A musician.
No? A musician. Oh, she's the guitar playing lady.
She is the reason we have rock and roll music today.
Yes.
She.
Oh my God. There's an image in my head already that I have of her in this like big wool coat just jamming on a fucking electric guitar.
Yeah. Sister Rosetta Tharpe was bisexual. The black woman who created rock music, you know, and was an inspiration to so many early rock musicians. She is bisexual.
Hell yeah.
And I just don't think I just don't think she really gets the credit she deserves. She should be a household name. We should all know that, hey, do you like My Chemical Romance? thank this woman. There are many members of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, like Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and Chuck Berry, that have cited her as one of their influences.
Oh, please tell me that she is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
You know, I don't know. I don't think I looked. It would be a crime of the highest order if she was not.
Yeah.
It would be absurd.
Hold on. I gotta look this up and see if I need to start a GoFundMe here in a minute. Or like a petition.org or whatever. Yeah. Change.org. I don't know. Yes. Okay. Yeah. There's a good and a bad to this. Yes, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Is it 2012 or something?
2018.
Yeah. I thought I was being ridiculous by saying 2012.
7 years ago.
That's, God. That's ridiculous. She should have been the first one.
Yeah, May 5th, 2018 is when she was inducted. That's
She should have been the first one in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame should have started with her.
Yeah. God, that's so frustrating.
And I guarantee it's because she's a black woman.
Yep. Oh, yeah. God, that's so frustrating.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe rose to popularity in the 30s and 40s when her gospel recordings became popular. She'd mix spiritual lyrics and this rhythmic accompaniment in a way that people hadn't heard before. Which unfortunately means that Christian rock is the original rock and roll, which is a little weird to think about.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, and then when some Christians are like, don't play that rock music, it's secular. It's like, well, actually, rock started out as like a fairly Christian thing. So if anything... You Christians should be very much about rock and roll. But yeah. So Christian rock is technically what rock started as. She was one of the first recording artists to use heavy distortion on her electric guitar.
Hell yeah.
So not only was she going electric and using an electric guitar, she was like one of the first people to be like, I'm going to make it. Here's my distortion pedal collection.
Yeah, and actually, I now that I remember from the name, because I'm so bad with names, I remember I was reading about her at one point. I know she toured with some of the most famous musicians of the era, like Count Basie, Cab Calloway, and Benny Goodman. Mm-hmm. She went on tour with them, and it's like, how is it that she is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Like I mean, she is now, but like...
Until 2018.
Until 2018. How could that...
Racism and misogyny. I truly believe it's racism and misogyny.
Yep.
Her 1945 song, Strange Things Happen Every Day, featured her own vocals, an electric guitar, bass, piano, and drums. And this song is often regarded as the forerunner to rock and roll as we know it today. So we have like the song that we said, yeah, this is the starting point. This is where all other rock and roll is born from. Which is so
That's really cool.
wild to think of, because then you get to things that feel so far disconnected from it, like, here's my, like, grindcore metal. But they also have Sister Rosetta Tharpe to thank for that. Like, that wouldn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a straight line, but there is a line that you can draw between Sister Rosetta Tharpe and King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, and that's amazing.
I don't think it's as squiggly of a line as we think.
I mean, true. It's King Gizzard just swaps genres so often.
But yeah, the whole genre, we owe it to her. So Tharpe was as openly bisexual as she could manage at the time. Back then, she would have been institutionalized if the wrong folks found out. But people who knew her and people since then, historians have been like, no, she, you know, would have relationships with women when she toured, but also had relationships with men. But yeah, I think bisexuals are great. Also, the website bi.org has a really cool list of famous bisexuals, which I think is neat. There are some people that
That's awesome.
I would argue probably need to be on there. Like one of the people who I think was bisexual, but also gets written off as a lesbian a lot, who I just didn't include. I don't know why, but Amelia Earhart. But people are like,
That is awesome.
Yeah, but people with her are like, well, she was secretly a lesbian and her marriage to her husband was convenience. But she had like a prenuptial agreement with her husband that said something to the effect of, I'm going to butcher this quote, I long to be free and I also long for you to be free. Something about even a gilded cage is a prison. and talking about how they're both open to have relations with others. And one of the women she is purported to have had a relationship with was Eleanor Roosevelt, who she would take on flights in her plane a lot. And she made Eleanor a book of pictures about their plane adventures. Had some gay ass names. So she's like, I want to get my girl a coffee table book of all of our pictures of our plane adventures.
I feel like there needs to be like a little graphic novel just depicting like the romance and adventures of Eleanor Roosevelt and Amelia Earhart. Like, there needs to be a graphic novel there. Like, I want to see them drawn very cutesy and cuddling in an airplane or something.
Yeah, and Eleanor Roosevelt, another famous bisexual. But yeah, we've always been here. We exist. We're not confused. You know, those of you who are only attracted to one gender, some of us are attracted to all of them, and it's real.
What are your thoughts on the term pansexual?
I think it is basically the same thing. I think it is very much akin to the difference in the trans community, where an older trans person might describe themselves as transsexual, but someone today is like, I don't use that term. I really feel like it's just, you know, you can tell how old I am by the term I use. Some people want to split hairs and say, well, pansexual is all genders, and bisexual means more than one gender. But a lot of early definitions of bisexual had nothing to do with what genders you're attracted to. And the definition I hold on to personally is that I experience both homosexual and heterosexual attraction.
That, yeah, absolutely. So that's actually was going to be what I was going to say. I think of pansexuality as attraction regardless of gender, whereas bisexuality I think of more as like attraction in both types of attraction, like both heterosexual and homosexual attraction.
Yeah, and like for me, being autistic, like I said, the idea of picking a gender to be attracted to feels ridiculous because of what I understand gender is and isn't. There are certain expressions, there are certain expressions of gender that I'm not attracted to. So if someone is trying to perform the cishet normative idea of femme or the cishet normative idea of mask, regardless of what their gender actually is, I'm not attracted to that. To me, it feels like you are doing a performance to the dominant class, and I just don't find it attractive. Yeah. I need my femmes to be like the joy that high femme lesbians have, where you want to do some real cutie stuff and you have a theme. And it's not that I'm trying to make myself look a certain way for a man. It's that I'm having fun with my femininity and this is my own thing. I need, you know, my mask folks to be having fun with it. And it's like, it's not, I'm not trying to fit a certain role. There's no machismo. I'm just doing my thing. So, I don't know. I'm not attracted to all expressions of gender, but I am attracted to all genders. All right, I'm gonna go watch The Mummy. Hey, before I thank our Patreon supporters, I would like to signal boost a mutual aid opportunity for our listeners. So if you listened to the last episode, you'll know that we are signal boosting for Wadi, who is a young Palestinian man living in Gaza. The Funds for Wadi Instagram page is running raffles to help get funds for him to be able to feed his family of seven. The aid sites where aid drops are happening are really dangerous. He was recently injured at one. And with no food getting into Gaza, it is increasingly more expensive to get food and prices are rising every day. So Funds for Wadi is a group, a collective, who is raising funds for him so he and his family can eat. So in the show details, I will have a link directly to Wadi's Chuffed page if you would like to donate directly. But you can also buy a ticket for one of the raffles. There's a raffle that ends at the end of this month that's got a really great no face bag in the raffle and a keffiyeh and a free commission from a really great artist and some stickers and stuff. It's $10 per ticket. But yeah, you can either help by, you know, contributing and buying a ticket to the raffle on the Funds for Wadi page, donating directly, doing both. Both is good. But yeah, continued contribution for Wadi will help him and his family make it to tomorrow. So I would really appreciate it if you would go check that out. Links to both are in the show details. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Lilith Rain, Janice Weston, Anarchista, Bethany Percy, Chamberlain Foreman, Nunya B, Kate Meshigoose, Kate Genius, Chibs1012, Dave Perrell, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus Lutzi, Helen Clifford, B Trossler, Sewing Sarah, Rachel Rachelson, Fintago, and Randy Lovings. You know the usual, if you want to help us out, you can tell other people about the show. If you enjoy the show being ad-free, which all of our shows are, you can help us by being our advertisers, because we don't pay for ads and we don't take paid ads. We grow entirely by word of mouth, and that's how today's lucky winner grew big enough for us to even consider doing info dumpies. That's how both info dumpies and today's lucky winner have been doing well enough that we're doing the spinoff to today's lucky winner and other things. So the biggest thing you can do for us is tell other people about the shows. You recommend us. You are our street team that helps us out a ton. Another way to help us is to subscribe on your podcatcher of choice and leave a rating, review, or nice comment if that is an option on the podcatcher you use. That gets us more activity, that gets us pushed more in algorithms, and helps people who like our kind of show get shown our show more frequently. If you're in a space to support us monetarily, you can also find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page in the show details. The Mixnomer Patreon is basically for anything we have done in the past and anything we're going to do in the future and anything we're doing right now. It's your one-stop shop to support all of the weirdos who make stuff like InfoDumpies. And if you would like to hang out with the Mixnomer gang, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Discord server in the show details. The Discord server is great. We have regular weekly stuff. Started a seasonal gardening club meeting because I like gardening. That's my new thing this year. We do like craft club, a stitch and bitch. We're going to be having, coming up in September, a 5-year birthday party for today's lucky winner. We're going to play some Jackbox games. We try to do stuff pretty regularly, and I think it's a really supportive community. I adore the Discord server, so if you want to dive in and hang out with us, even if you just want to lurk and enjoy some fire memes, that's great too. But that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.